Today's Not Sam Wrestling is being brought to you by Comedy Central's Roast Battle. What's Roast Battle? Imagine the perfect combination of stand-up comedy, rap battles, and professional wrestling all in one place. Join Brian Moses and DJ Coach T for Roast Battle the Podcast as they bring you weekly live battles from the world-famous Comedy Store in Hollywood, as well as behind-the-scenes interviews with the industry's best comedians. You'll hear some insensitive jokes, some politically incorrect jokes, but every joke you hear comes from a place of love. Subscribe now to Roast Battle for new episodes every Thursday in your podcast feed. And welcome to Not Sam Wrestling.
This is Not Sam Wrestling.
Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. What a show I've got for you today. What a show. It's going to be a fun one. Thank you for joining us. This is Not Sam Wrestling. And we've got a lot to do. We've always got a lot to do. I was on Busted Open this week on Sirius XM. It's a show my friend Dave LaGreca hosts it alongside Bully Ray on some days and Tommy Dreamer on some days and Mark Henry, the world's strongest man, on other days. Lots of talent on that show. Lots of talent. But the reason that I bring it up is because it got very controversial. Of course, a couple of weeks ago, after my Bianca Belair comments on the NXT TakeOver pre-show, Mark Henry said that I owed her an apology for what I said. I came on this here podcast, Not Sam Wrestling, and announced to the world I would not be apologizing to anyone for anything that I said. And I still stand by that. Everything I said on that takeover, I think, was actually right and proved to be right. But Mark invited me to do Busted Open, and I said, oh boy, when the world's strongest man comes a-calling, you do not tuck your tail and run. You show up. Feet firmly planted on the floor. So I did. The video's up online. It's up on YouTube. And we talked about it. We hashed it out, and I told him exactly why I would not be apologizing. But that I absolutely thought that his idea that I should have not said that or that I was wrong or whatever, I had no problem with him thinking that I was wrong or shouldn't have said that, or that's fine. He's allowed to think that. And I'm allowed to sit there and go, like, not only am I okay with the fact that I said it, I'll say it again in that space, in that time and space. But it was a good conversation, and it was good to see that the world's strongest man hadn't taken it personally, just had maybe got a little hot under the collar because I was so direct with my comments. But we talked about it, and it was good. And it was so good, in fact, that after Busted Open, I said, Mark, why don't you come and do Not Sam Wrestling? It's been a while. I don't think he's been on the show since like SummerSlam a year and a half ago when he was part of the live show that we did with Dan Soder and with Skylar Astin. So I said, it's been too long. You come do the show. So that's why today Mark Henry is my guest on Not Sam Wrestling. And we'll get to that in a couple minutes. But first, I do want to tell you guys that you have the opportunity to see Not Sam Wrestling live. You guys have heard about it. I've been beefing with the Major Brothers Wrestling Figure Podcast for a long time. There's something about these two, Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder, of course, spelled Z-A-C-K-H, where, I don't know, I collect action figures, wrestling figures, and it's not something that is a negative force in my life. You know, it's something I enjoy. It's an escape. It's a relief. It's the whole thing. But for some reason, Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins have made it a toxic force in their life where anybody who comes even close, if you are not a disciple of Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder, if you're not just sitting there, just kissing their ass and sitting there and telling them that, oh, they're the greatest and they're the Michael Jordan and Dwight Howard or whoever they are of wrestling figure collecting, as if that's a thing. If you're not sitting there abiding by the church of Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins wrestling figure collections, which means that they are Jesus and the Virgin Mary, and I'll let you guess who's who. If you are not agreeing with that, then you're an enemy in their eyes. You are a threat. It's like any cult leader. Cult leaders, when somebody comes along and says, you know, this cult leader is full of baloney. You guys are all brainwashed. They go nuts. He's an enemy. Look at those Scientology documentaries. Excommunicated. We can't have him here. He's a destructive force. That's what the Major Brothers did to me. All I did was sit there and go like, look, I got my own collection. They started making fun of me. Then all of a sudden I pointed out, I don't even think the Major Brothers actually collect wrestling figures. All they do is sit there and buy figures on eBay. One minute, they're making fun of me for my collection. The next minute, they're spending the first 45 minutes of their podcast announcing all the figures that they got their audience to rip, that they ripped off their own audience for. And they're all figures that came out years ago that they should have had already. Oh, what do you mean? That came out years ago, but they should have bought them originally, but they don't have them. Zack Ryder's buying Classic Superstars. What? Classic Superstars came out long enough ago that you should have them all, but not long enough ago that you would have played with them and ruined them. Anybody who's our age, I'm the same age as those guys. If you're buying full sets of Classic Superstars now, it's only because you didn't buy them then. There's no reason you would need replacements. And that's what Zack Ryder's doing. Because he didn't have the collection. Because he's not a real collector. But we're going to hash out this beef once and for all at Caroline's on Broadway. You're going to be able to see us. It's Not Sam Wrestling meets the Major Brothers, Ryder and Kurt Hawkins, live in New York City. Caroline's on Broadway. The whole thing is going down Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m., February 27th. It's only a few weeks away. February 27th at 7:30 p.m. It's the battle of the century. It's the battle for podcast supremacy. It's the Major Brothers versus the last professional broadcaster, Sam Roberts. Only one show leaves alive, and it's gonna be May. Not that hosky. Get your tickets now, carolines.com, to see the next big live event. Of course, if you're on our Patreon page, patreon.com/NotSamWrestling, if you're a Not Sam shill that's a Hall of Fame level shill, you can get in for free. Just hit me up and let me know, and I will hit you back. I promise you that. Let's get into it. Mark Henry is my guest this week on Not Sam Wrestling. As I said, we talked on Busted Open all about the apology and why he wouldn't be getting one and why it wasn't anything. It wasn't a personal attack on him, but it just wasn't going to happen. And so that's where we started in our conversation this week for Not Sam Wrestling. But we branched out into a lot of things. We branched out into life. We heard about, we found out Mark Henry's got a new role in WWE, which is really, really interesting. And a whole lot of other stuff. He's a great guest, and he's my guest. This week on Not Sam Wrestling, it's the world's strongest man, Mark Henry.
The Not Sam Wrestling interview.
Figaro.
Man, who knew the world's strongest man can sing too?
Shit.
Welcome back. Mark Henry is here. You know, I think a lot of people are going to be surprised at this because after that clip that went everywhere, after I said what I said on the NXT TakeOver pre-show, I heard even, you know, I have a Discord room set up for the people who follow the show on Patreon. And immediately it was like, oh no, Mark Henry's mad at Sam. This is not good for Sam.
I wasn't mad.
You're just voicing your opinion.
I was just voicing my opinion.
Yeah. You know,
flexing the muscles.
reminding everybody. Just letting them know.
Then, you know, everybody has an opinion. Yeah. You know, they're not quite like buttholes and all stink, but some of them are valid.
Right. Some of them stink.
Some of them are like
buttholes. I don't think my opinions are like
buttholes. No, my opinion's not, you know, I think that sometimes they serve their purpose, but sometimes it's like you have to agree to disagree.
Right.
And just let people be entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, if you're right, it'll show itself. And if you're wrong, it'll show itself. Like, the truth is just going to be the truth. And so it'll be what it is.
Sometimes it takes time. It might be wrong at the moment, but 5 minutes later, it might be different. An hour later.
Right.
A day, a month, a year, you know, a decade.
Right.
It'll come to fruition, like, what was really the thing that mattered the most will reveal itself.
Well, it's all about context, right?
Yeah.
Like the context of the when, the where, the why, everything.
And a how to. You got to always throw the how in there. Yeah. How can you get to this point? Or how do you think that that person is better than that person? Like, I mean, there's so many variables. And I tend to have my opinion on stuff, but not be so fixed to my opinion because I want to be right,
mm-hmm.
that it's troubling. Because I know so many people that I can't tell them shit.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, man, hey, they say it's a blue moon tomorrow. You know what a blue moon is. Man, there's no such thing as a blue moon. The moon is always going to be the same color. No, dumbass. Like, it's like a two-day full moon. Oh, so now you just got to just keep on living, man. Just try to get people to – you might know something today that you didn't know yesterday.
Right, and it really is amazing, too. I mean, part of it is – understanding that, all right, I've got my opinion and I know what I think I know, but at the end of the day, it doesn't, I'm not here to convince everybody else that I'm right. I'm here to put my opinion out there, and if you agree, you agree. If you don't agree, you don't agree. But it's the people who lose their minds and spend all their energy trying to make it so that their opinion matches everybody, and everybody that they see, they have to convince. No, tell me I'm right.
Tell me I'm right, damn it. And I just realized we were doing a podcast, and I pointed like, ha. And it was like, nobody saw that. You may want to say something about it.
That's okay. I mean, you're the world's strongest man. You can get away with a lot. You know what I mean?
There's some people that'll, you know, they'll try to give it back. You don't scare me, Mark Henry.
Who says that? Because even me,
it's been
I go
a while, but you know,
yeah. Because even when you said Sam should apologize, I said, okay, that's Mark's opinion. I think I know Mark well enough to tell him I'm not going to apologize. Here's why. But you're entitled to think whatever you can think. But there is that other part of me that goes, oh boy, if Mark's actually upset about this, I'm in
Please
a lot of trouble.
I don't get bit.
Exactly.
I heard the Washutus are biters. I'm as free-flowing a guy. I could not have evolved this far if I was a bullheaded dummy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very kind of loose when it comes to people's opinions and different philosophies. I enjoy a different philosophy.
Yeah.
But I'm going to challenge you to make me see it your way. And if you can't put it together where I can understand where you're coming from, then I'm going to consider myself right and tell you again, I think you're wrong.
Is that something you learned in wrestling specifically? Like, do you feel like that's, or does that just develop with age?
You know what, that developed with age and the people that I've been around the last 20 years, mm-hmm. I'm around a lot of educators and philosophers, and my manager and his wife both are professors at UT. Well, my manager just passed away this past year, but he's been like a dad to me since I was 18, and a really, really smart and rational guy. And it's like, won't you see stuff from other people's perspective? And I try to do that more times than not. Like, whenever a situation arises, I want to see it from another person's standpoint. The cab driver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Texan, and I did not bring a jacket here. Yesterday, I'm walking, and I'm cold. And I said, you know what? I know it's only four blocks. I'm going to get in this damn cab. And I get in, and the guy goes, oh, that's just three or four blocks up. And I was like, yeah, I knew that when I got in the cab. But I'm thinking to myself, maybe I'm taking this guy out of his normal routine, or maybe he's waiting in line for somebody that's going to the airport and I'm screwing him out of his position. I think about stuff from other people's perspective.
So you don't sit there and immediately go, I'm the customer,
man,
okay?
Shut the hell up and drive.
Right. But there was a time in your life where you would have.
I would have said,
shut the hell up,
hey, man,
and
shut the hell up and just drive me up the block. And I try not to be that dude no more. It's just, it's not enough energy in the day. I'm not enough time in the day to give out that kind of bad energy.
When did you make that transition? When did you switch over to the guy who isn't going to yell at the cab driver?
Probably about 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
I started to feel, you know, my kids are, they'll do what they see.
Right.
And my kids are now not little bitty kids. I got a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, Jacob, I hear him and Joanna fussing about something. And he goes, just do what I said. And I was like, damn, that sound like me. I said, Jacob, listen, you can't tell your talk to your sister like that. Like, just because I talk to you like that, don't mean you could talk to other people like that.
Right. Like, do as I say, not as I do.
As I do.
Right.
And you have a problem with her, you come talk to me and let me talk to her, and I'll get her straight, and I'll let you know if you're right or not.
Yeah.
I'll be the judge and the jury and the executioner.
That's your job. You're the dad.
I'm the dad.
Yeah.
So you gotta map out what you want to do with your kids and how you want to be viewed, and you don't want them to have I told them recently, I'm done arguing and yelling.
Like for life.
I'm not screaming at y'all no more. Mm-hmm. Y'all too old to be screamed at. Y'all should know better, or just get ready to do the 400, because I have a workout called the 400. It's 400 reps.
Of?
It's 100 bench, 100 upper body,
uh-huh.
100 core, and 100 legs.
So you make the kids do calisthenics as their punishment?
Yeah, so it might be 50 push-ups, and then it might be 50 dips, and that's your 100 in the upper body. Then it might be Y-ups,
uh-huh,
or V-ups, however people call them. Then it might be sit-ups. It might be, you know, elbow-to-knee raises, you know, whatever.
So how did you figure that out? Because, I mean, I've never – most of the time, it's you're grounded, or you've got extra chores, or you can't do this, or whatever.
I figure they're going to be collegiate athletes,
uh-huh,
so they might as well be in the best damn physical condition they can get in.
Let's get some training in here.
let's get some training. Y'all, you're not going to listen to me. And you could beat people and verbally abuse people,
mm-hmm,
but nothing gets your attention like muscle soreness.
Right, and it stays.
Like, you go to the military.
Yeah.
You know why the military is more disciplined than anything else?
Why?
Because people are under physical duress.
Mm-hmm.
And they discipline you by physical things. And I figured, hell, if it works for the military, it works for me.
Yeah. And it does, right?
Yeah, it works.
I bet it does.
If I called home right now, they'd be at school. But
if they weren't, 400.
And I said, Jacob, you owe me 400. What did I do? But Dad, I didn't do anything. I break them down.
Yeah,
I'm just playing. That's not cool, Dad. You scared me. And I can say, hey, give me your phone. They would be like upset about it.
Right.
But after a while, they might go watch TV or, mm-hmm, turn the radio on or grab a book. They'll entertain themselves. But if your ass is tired,
man,
and your arms are sore and your stomach is cramping and your legs and your thighs and hamstrings are shaking,
it's universal.
You're going to remember that for a few hours.
Yeah.
It ain't going to be temporary.
And the next time it happens, you're like, I don't want to start this because I know where this ends. Yeah. I mean, I remember growing up, it'd be like, okay, well, now you have to go up to your room and you have to be in there for 3 hours a night doing homework. And I would literally just sit there for 3 hours looking at the wall. And it was fine. I could do it standing on my head. There was no, like, the idea of.
Your idea of punishment is,
I don't care. Just go in and stare at the wall, and I did my time. If it was, you got to do the 400? No, I'll do my homework instead. Thank you.
Dad, I'll do my homework.
Yeah, just get it done. You can check it, whatever you want to do.
You'd be jacked.
Yeah, I would. I wish I'd had the 400.
My mom worked us.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, man. I cut my yard at 8 o'clock at night one time. I was in the house doing something I wasn't supposed to. She told me to get off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how kids get on the phone and they with their friends. Yeah, man, on tomorrow, man, Kung Fu Theater comes on at 12 o'clock. And then after that, rock and wrestling comes on. And then, you know, just kid stuff.
Right.
And my mom came in and she said, "You still on the phone?" And I was like, "No, no, yes, no, I'm hanging up." She was like, "You got something to do. It's still enough light for you to mow the damn yard. Go."
Because she's sitting there going, like, you're not going to waste your hours on the phone. There's
things
that need to be.
Bro, it was getting dark. I mean, it was dark already. It was enough light that I could barely see, like, the line. Like, she was proving a point.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, you going to be a smart ass and not do what I say?
Yeah.
I got you.
And you would do it.
Out of fear of getting a whooping
right.
or not being able to eat.
Right.
it was a three-headed monster with her.
So who did you have in your life? Like, you go to the Olympics, right, and you build this reputation for yourself to the point where WWE is interested. And I'm sure WWE is not the only game in town. All of a sudden, you're this kid who's got all this attention on you, money offers coming at you. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. Sign this contract. Sign that contract. Who's around you that's able to guide you into being like, no, this WWE thing, this is a lifetime over here. This is a bad idea.
Terry Todd. That was the guy that just passed away recently that was the guy that started the Arnold Strongman that I won in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Terry did that. He coached Bill Kazmaier. He coached so many that world famous strongman, and Terry was the first guy to basically create what strength coaches are. There was no such thing as a strength coach in college sports before Terry, and you know he's just super well known in physical culture. They have the largest physical culture library in the world in Austin, Texas, the Letcher Stark Center. It's in the north end of the UT football stadium, 20,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Jack Johnson's clothes and boxing gloves, Rocky Marciano stuff, the Tom Landry archive. I begged him because I'm such a big Cowboy fan. Like, he has the book that Tom Landry created the shotgun formation in and the plays. And I was like, can I touch it? And he's like, no, you can't touch it. Like, they have to put on white gloves and they have to spray this treatment stuff so it don't mess with the page. You know what I'm saying?
Right, so nothing dissolves. There's no acid.
Crazy.
There's no, yeah.
And there's some stuff, the first stationary bike ever made,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the template, Joe Weider's collection. The template he set for the first weights that they started making, the universal weights diagrams for how the dimensions of making the stacks, the weight stacks with the cable pulleys and stuff, like all of those diagrams and stuff as inventions are in there.
Wow.
I mean, I took Vince McMahon in there because there's a section about wrestling.
Mm-hmm. But he's also a bodybuilding guy, too. I mean, he likes all this stuff,
too.
Yeah.
But there's a picture in there of Andre and Vince when he was young sitting at a table with Andre and Vince's dad.
Wow.
And I didn't tell him about it. I said, man, you got to come check this library out next time we're in Austin. And he was like, well, let's go. And I was like, all right. I was so excited. And we got in there, and we started walking around, and Terry came out and said, hey, I'm going to show you the wrestling area. And he took Vince down, and I just elbowed him, and I pointed, and he looked over there, and he just started crying.
Really?
Yeah, just broke him down.
Wow.
And he was like, man, thank you. Like, that's the relationship that I have with Vince. It's a little different than –
I mean, that's like familial.
Yeah, it's more than a boss employee.
Right. Well, I mean, you talk about a guy, you know, I don't want to go as far as to say paternal figure because that feels like I'm overstepping, but.
He is.
Yeah,
he is.
I mean, you're a kid when you show up
like,
in 96.
We have love for each other. We've expressed that we love each other.
I mean, and you grew up as an adult there with him, right?
I did. There was a lot of immaturity in me that he kind of, you know, chiseled the rough pieces back and made smooth.
Right.
And as a businessman, like how to do business mm-hmm. and how to market. And you don't have to duck. There's no camera. I mean, it's just random stuff that I would know nothing about if it wasn't for him.
Right.
Like, you know, guys that go to college for 8 years to learn half the stuff that I've learned. And I don't take it for granted. And I told him I appreciate the stuff that I know.
Yeah.
And I can't, you can't just put me in a situation and I feel rattled. Like I own the territory under my feet.
Right.
And that's that unwavering kind of confidence is what you need in the world. I mean, nobody, I mean, I want to use the P word, but nobody respects the P.
Right. Right.
Or A.
Right. Somebody that's sitting there, you can tell in a person's eyes, they're unsure, they're trying to figure out what's the right answer, what's the right thing to say.
Exactly. What's the right, Vince hated when people come up, hey boss, good to see you, man. Thank you so much for having me on the card. You know, he hate them dudes.
Right. Right.
He have a, I mean, it's a hate. It's a loathing.
Really?
That he won't, like, be a man. Shit, step up.
Right.
Like, I respect your work and I pay you for your work, but.
I mean, early on, I'll tell you, when I started doing stuff over there, it wasn't with Vince, obviously, but it was other people in the company where I would text and say, you know, thank you so much for having me this weekend. And immediately it would be, you got yourself here this weekend. You know what I mean? That's like an energy that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like, what I mean? You don't need to, we're not doing you favors here.
Yeah.
You're here for a reason.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Everybody have a purpose. If you see somebody around there, believe you me, they have some purpose for doing it.
Did you go into it when you got hurt, right before you started wrestling, when you trained for the Olympics and you get hurt, did you go into a panic starting to, because you obviously you had no wrestling career yet, like wrestling wasn't your life yet, and it looked like, you know, powerlifting.
I thought it was over.
Right, and did you go like, oh
damn.
Right, this was, because powerlifting's your bread and butter before that.
Yeah, like powerlifting, weightlifting, right. Strongman. Like I had never broke nothing before.
Right.
I tore a muscle in between my ribs in the Olympics in 96, but that was pretty much, you know, I dropped a plate on my foot.
Oof.
I dropped a 45-pound plate on my foot one time, you know, bruised my foot real, real bad where I couldn't walk. But I never had many injuries.
Right.
And then I got into wrestling, and the first damn week, I break my ankle. I'm like, shit. Because
all of a sudden, this isn't going to work.
How did I break my ankle? Like, I mean, it was very, very puzzling first. And then it was like the, oh, my God, man, they might think that I can't do this.
Right, the injury prone thing, like the.
Bro, it was a little bit nerving.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, Vince said, listen, it happens. Like, heal up and get your butt back to work. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. But everything work wise was easy for me because I grew up working hard. I ain't had no problem working.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, I guess when you come from another sport, the idea that.
I've been a world champion in two sports already at that point. I mean, over 15, 20,000 hours.
Right. So you already have this mindset of an elite athlete.
What is it going to take for me to be good in wrestling? It might take me about 3 years of really focusing on that and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that I looked at it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you did.
I just put my nose to the grindstone and did my thing. That's what I was supposed to do.
I was thinking about you, you know, because I was reading all the rumors are out now about who's going into the Hall of Fame this year, and this is just the time of the year where names start to get introduced and that class starts to happen, and you had your big year last year going into the Hall of Fame. That must be such a high, right? That's like the last accomplishment. You were the world champion. You did. I can't imagine that there's anything in wrestling that you didn't accomplish. You get into the Hall of Fame. When you realize now that the year's gone by and the new class is going in, and the cycle is just keeps moving.
It repeats.
Is there anything in you that goes like, oh, man, like, when am I want to be able to do that again. I want to have another year. Or are you good?
No, this wasn't my first Hall of Fame.
Right.
Like, you know, I never was like, oh, I'm working my life to get into the Hall of Fame. Right. Nobody never goes into it. You get to where you're like Brady, and people start going, oh, you're going to be first ballot. You won six championships. You've been the top. You're in the top five in statistical categories. You're going.
Right.
Like, then you start thinking about it at the end.
I see. So it's not like you're sitting there at Super Bowl number two and going like, oh, maybe I get into the Hall of Fame now. You're going, I just need to get to the next game.
Keep going.
Yeah.
The next game. You know, going into the Silsby Wall of Honor and then going to the Collegiate Sports Hall of Fame, then the International Sports Hall of Fame, then the WWE Hall of Fame. Like, time has fixed it to where I'm doing all the things that I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of just keep on living.
Right, and finding new stuff.
Finding
so that you
new
keep...
things to keep going, and that's where I am with my life. You know, it's just like I get to wake up every day and not try to top myself, but just to exist and keep going and not regress.
Right.
I see so many people, man, like I wake up and I love Vince Young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he was UT great, you know, guy I respect a lot. And Vince has had some issues. And I wish that I was around him more so I could help him focus. But, like, you know, I look at the news yesterday and he gets a DUI. He's got one before. So I feel like it's my job to call and say, hey, man, don't trip. I know you did some stuff. Take your lumps. But listen, the next time that you get in a situation where you feel like you got to get in your car, why don't you call me? I sent a friend of mine the other day an Uber.
Right.
Because he was so liquored up, he called me and said, Mark, man, I'm drunk, man. Come get me. I'm downtown.
It wasn't
like,
Pat
man.
McAfee, was it?
No. It was another drunk. he was like, man, come get me, man. It's like 12:30 in the morning. And I couldn't see myself rolling over telling my wife, I'm going to go pick up Chris. He's downtown drunk and take him home and come back. I'm finna call him an Uber. And I called him an Uber.
Right.
I would have done that for him. Vince got an Uber account.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but some people need you. Like, athletes have stemmed from coaching.
Right.
And you always had somebody coaching you.
Right, and I guess because you dedicate your life to the athletic part of it, it just spills over into every aspect of life. Like, you're waiting to kind of be guided somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be my role with a few people that I know.
Is this in wrestling or in life?
In life.
So you're looking at being like a life mentor.
Life coach. And
life
mentor.
Coach.
And I've done that for a long time in wrestling. And me being gone this last year and a half, there's a lot of stuff that has happened in the locker room that would have never happened under my watch.
Like what? You don't have to get into specifics with names, but, I mean, as far as you want to go.
Well, people arguing and fussing about stuff. There's been some my disrespecting my wife or my girlfriend type of stuff. Like, there's been a couple of people be habitually late, in which Vince hates.
Yeah.
But he's not. He don't have Taker or me. You know, Booker is not there, only at TV. You know, so like the guys, Big Show has been injured. So all the guys that hold people face to the fire is not there.
Was Roman that guy?
Roman was kind of that guy.
Kind of getting there?
He was kind of getting there.
Cena, maybe?
No. John, you know, he's on his bus and off to the next place.
He's just got so much going on.
But he got so much to do. He ain't got time. I mean, but he will go, okay, guys, like, the place is a pigsty. Right. Like, don't leave your trash.
Right.
You know? And, you get the young guys. These young guys now, somebody told me that they asked some young guys to clean up, and they're like, man, it ain't my job to clean up.
Wow.
That shit is finna come to an abrupt stop because I will be at all TVs, at all pay-per-views now. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And this is really new, like in the last 2 weeks. And every pay-per-view is going to be issues with people in the locker room. Like, we finna reestablish the leadership chain of command.
So you're going in to all the pay-per-views and TVs and whatnot, and you're taking on mainly a behind-the-scenes role of just...
Just to keep everybody checks and balances.
I mean, wow.
There's no title for it.
Right.
I really am not a title guy anymore.
Uh-huh. But just so your presence is there.
Yeah.
And that's not a position that's existed before.
No, you never had to do that.
Right. But it's something, but you actually like that. You like.
I like structure. I like discipline. I like.
Right. And you know it changes for
the
better.
Right thing. Yeah. Like, man, I don't like the perception of me walking into a room, people, oh my God, one of those wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody screwed it up. The image, they tarnish the way people see us. And back in the old days, guys used to wreck hotel rooms and trash rental cars and all of that dumb stuff. And then when I came into wrestling, they were like, we're out of cars. No, there's plenty of cars out there. You're one of those wrestlers, no.
Not for you.
We're not renting a car to you.
Yeah.
And it was like that. And we had to, like, recreate or reestablish the trust. Me, The Rock, and Kane, and D'Lo, and Brian Christopher, Scotty Too Hot. Like, the young guys back then, 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
We was reaping the benefits of people being buttholes.
Right. Right.
And
you had to fix that.
Yeah, I had to fix that.
And now you have to go in and make sure that the buttholeness doesn't return.
Right.
I see.
I don't want it to regress.
I see.
Work too hard, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and your purpose was not so that it was good for you. Your purpose was that it was what the industry standard should be.
And justifiably so.
Yeah.
Like, that's the last thing that Vince wants too is, you know, people to have a harder time getting to work.
Of course. Now, who, when you were young, who was the guy that was doing that for your locker room? And I'm like, you know, 96, 97, even 98, like before you are established enough, because you can't just walk in there and do it. You don't know yet.
No, we had Yoko and Undertaker, like, they have a crew called BSK,
mm-hmm.
and that was in the time of the cliques, and everybody, there was like a bunch of, it was like a bunch of gangs. Like, what crew, what set you claim?
So it's like going to prison.
Yeah.
Like, you're figuring out, like, where in the yard you're supposed to be standing.
Yeah, people speaking Kiss Arnie around you. Like, what are you saying? I mean, it was a different time, and the whole cleanup was in effect, mm-hmm. because in the 90s, you know, they had the whole steroid debacle. They tried to convict Vince.
Right.
In Supreme Court. Drug charges.
Yeah.
And, you know, all kind of stuff. And that's when we're not a sport, we're entertainment. with Sports Element.
Mm-hmm.
And they're independent contractors. I don't tell people what to do. I don't force people to do anything. I'm not saying, hey, if you don't take drugs, you can't work here, whatever. Like, but them guys also, the cleanup came from not only the drugs and discipline, but it came into, hey, don't wreck the rental cars, don't tear the hotels up, present yourself business casual, no more sweatsuits and Zubas.
Right.
And start wearing like a jeans and a jacket.
Well, it's like, not only do you have to realize that you can't act like there's no tomorrow, because there's definitely going to be a tomorrow, but now more than ever, everybody's aware of everything. Everything is getting recorded, every little moment, every sort of out of control. You can't go into a hotel lobby and do this. You can't screw up a rental car. It'll be on TMZ in 20 right. minutes.
Yeah, less than 20.
Right. Right.
I mean, so we had, I mean, man, it was so many guys, like the old guys that, you know, Owen Hart was one that, you know, I started riding with Owen because Owen wanted to always, after the show, go straight to the town. Some people like to stay in the town that they're in and party and then drive the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like to go straight to the hotel.
Right.
Like wherever, if we got a 3-hour drive, let's just go and get it out of the way, wake up where we're supposed to be.
Right.
And so I started to do that. And I was learning from good role models.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wasn't. You know, so... they finally got it. You know, it probably took till 2001, 2002 before everything was like pristine. You could rent cars without being in trouble, getting looked at funny and stay in hotels. And
so
people would actually go, oh man, it's good to see y'all again.
Right, right.
As opposed to, oh, shh.
Yeah. Yeah, you know it's rough when you have a customer base that's always going to need rental cars like wrestlers. So it should be a rental company's like a dream come true.
Right.
But the fact that it's a nightmare is like, okay, this is on you guys because this could be really easy for them. So whose idea was this role for you? Was this something that you went to WWE and said, why don't you bring me into the pay-per-views and let me kind of...
I kept hearing too much negativity. And I'm like...
Like people were coming to you and going like, Mark, you wouldn't believe what's going on here.
Not just them, but you know... talent relations and different people that I'm friends with, and I'm like, well, do something about it. And they like, man, it's just, I'm like, listen, I'll do it. Like, I will. I'll take the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, I ain't scared of nobody whooping my ass.
Right.
And two, I've been there and done that enough that if I go to Vince and say, hey, he don't respect nothing, his ass need a fine. Maybe he'll respect the $1,500 being taken out of his check.
Right. And if somebody comes to you and says, did you go tell Vince I need to find
damn straight I did.
Okay.
And we'll do it again.
Right.
The next time you're late, it'll probably go up about $200.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggest you get there early. That's the conversation that'll be had in the next year.
Wow. I think that's cool, man.
It's just you got to be responsible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want the business to suffer because of one or two people not respecting it.
And is part of your role also going to be kind of keeping an eye on who on the roster right now can develop into this guy that
yeah.
you are? Like,
definitely going to try to empower some people.
Right.
To, people used to call it the Stooges. And you can call me whatever you want to call me.
Right.
But what you won't do is make the business look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just can't stand that. You know, it's just like, wow. You really want to, you know, Seth Rollins burn it down because you just feel like, hey, that's what I want to do?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people in sports and in entertainment. So you have to imagine it's double in sports entertainment.
I heard it's pretty bad in entertainment. Like, some of these actors and actresses are...
Well, it's selfish, right? It's just like, it's just my show. It's about me. Nobody cares about the industry. It's It's, and I'm not talking about wrestling, you know, I'm talking about show business. It's this idea of like, no, I'm here to get ahead for me, to get as much money as I can get, to get fame for me. And once I'm done, I don't care what's left. Scorch the earth. There's a lot, I think, in sports and entertainment and anything that is ego-driven, like all this is, and anything that is fame-driven, like all this is, you find it a lot, man. You find that a lot, I think. And it does take people to kind of weed that out, right?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. You need people that's responsible enough to get that done.
So that question about you and the Hall of Fame and everything, you're not even looking at that because you've got this new role with WWE. You're on Busted Open all the time, you know, 2-3 times a week. You're mentoring people outside of the business, just in life.
Yeah, my personal business and, you know, having a family. You know,
yeah, people forget that.
People forget that you gotta go home and be dad.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even realize, you know, we've got a 2-year-old, and it's one of those things where you don't realize until you're there. That's also a full-time job.
Boy, 2 years old that's a wreck. I remember both times, like, you stop having tablecloths on tables.
You give up on it.
The kids start grabbing it, and they're like, I'm just going to pull this till all the shit comes out. and the toilet rolls.
Yeah.
I started thinking about that. All of the stuff that at 2 years old that they used to just destroy and mess up. And you could, you know, when they eat, they're eating, they're just going.
That's it.
Just throw it down on the floor.
Right.
Hey, you little bastard, pick that up.
And we're going, why is the dog sick? Because the kid keeps throwing his food on the floor and the dog's eating all of it. Yeah, I knew it was bad when my wife Jess was like, we need a new lamp. And I go, why do we need a new lamp? And she goes, well, the boy jumped on the back of the couch, and then he ran down the back of the couch, and he rode the lamp down to the floor. he jumped off the couch, he grabbed the lamp, the whole thing came over, and I'm like, yeah.
And you think success.
Yeah, exactly. But I was also thinking about what you were saying about your kids and your son sounding like you. We're just at the point now where he'll say these little words, and you go, where did he get that from? And you realize they're listening to everything. They're a sponge right now. And you're like, my choices for the first time ever actually matter.
Jacob said, I guess he was like 5, and he heard me on the phone tell somebody, that's bullshit. I don't believe not one thing you's telling me right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on the couch, and Jacob comes in and goes, Daddy, that's bullshit. My wife turned to me and said, where did you get that from? I was like, he heard me say that on the phone.
But you have to stop yourself from laughing because all it's going to do is encourage.
Yeah, you can't laugh. You can't. You got to be like, Jacob, don't talk like that. That's not nice.
And then get him out of the room so you can laugh.
So you can go laugh.
Oh, that's great. Well, man.
That's such a great influence.
I'm happy for all your success, man. And I'm specifically glad that we don't have the heat that the internet thought we might, because if I ever show up at another pay-per-view, I would have to deal with the new locker room general.
My whole thing about the whole situation was I saw stuff on social media where people were saying you were sexist and you were being racist toward Bianca and all of this. And I was like, no. I know who the hell Sam is. It's not a sexist or a racist. It's the fact that Sam believes that somebody else is entitled to that spot. Mm-hmm. And that's what we just disagree. That's just what it is. It don't have nothing to do with all the other stuff. Don't be bringing in, if you got some substantiated evidence that he's a racist or a sexist, then put it out there.
Right.
Because I want to know. Because I don't want to be sitting next to his ass all the time and he'd be like out of character like that. But I know what it was, and I ain't want people giving you negative hate.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, and I mean, I don't, you know, if you say that guy's an idiot, he doesn't know what he's talking about, cool. You know, that's an opinion.
That's an opinion.
I'm good with that, but yeah, the other stuff kind of.
Yeah, you can't start verbally assassinating people because that's what it is. When you start, if you call somebody a sexist or a racist, shit, that can mess with their career.
It's a big, yeah, but you see those accusations get flung around these days like
very easily,
very easily, and it's disrespectful to the people that actually have had to deal with that, and it actually lets real racist, real sexist off the hook because now you're lumping this giant group into it where it dilutes everything.
Yeah.
You know?
But the people that I know that is unjustly put against them, I'm quick to be, you know, no, that's not the situation. That's not the case. But people that deserve it, you know, Liam Neeson.
yeah, dude. I've been talking about that. And it's amazing, too, how many people are like, you can't really believe
that.
So
you mean to tell me that a friend of yours went through some traumatic issue, and because that person was black, that all black people are rapists?
That's what I said.
All black people are, like, you want to retaliate against some innocent black dude walking down the street because he looked like somebody, like.
It doesn't even look like him. It's just the same.
Just the same.
Same color, same ethnicity.
Just stupidity. And I'm like, I wouldn't. If I was his personal assistant, I was his manager, publicist, agent, somebody, I'd be like, man, can't you just shut the hell up? Like you killing me.
Yeah. Yeah. They canceled his red carpet because they were like, we can't do this. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. You know, I people go, well, when you're that angry, you don't know how you would react. And I'm sitting there going, I can imagine the anger part is fine, being angry and wanting revenge on something. But in my mind, I go, I want revenge on rapists. Like, I wouldn't even, like,
go and start lobbying for harsher, crueler punishments for people that physically assault or verbally assault somebody.
Right. Right.
You know, do something like that.
Right.
Don't make it a case where it's against a race of people.
Right. It's crazy.
Like that's beyond ludicrous to me. I think that he's what we call work yourself into a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in so many movies that were like that he's subconsciously believing. I think some of that shit is made up. I don't believe that even really happened.
Uh-huh.
Because people that's like that, they do stuff to get attention. And I think he's a attention seeker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's a spot picker because anybody that's willing to pick on somebody that have no idea what's coming to them, like, that's not saying, hey, you need to prepare yourself. I'm upset with you and we got an issue. Okay, you gonna sneak up on somebody and do something to somebody that don't know shit from Pinola?
Right, right.
It's ridiculous.
My God. Well, Mark Henry, we've learned a lot, I feel like. Always do with you. You can listen to Mark Henry on Busted Open. You can follow Mark Henry on Twitter and everything. And
The Mark Henry on everything.
The Mark Henry.
The Mark Henry.
Across all forms of social media. And if you're living life incorrectly,
I will find you.
Knock it off, because Mark Henry's gonna make you do 400 right now, and that's the last thing. That's the last thing that you want to do.
You don't want it.
No. Thank you so much, man.
Man, I appreciate you having me, man.
Of course.
Here is Sam Roberts.
Thanks to the world's strongest, Mark Henry, for being a part of the show this week. Super fun talking to that guy. I think it's a cool gig that he's got. I never would have thought of that. The idea that he's going to just be backstage, taking on a backstage role in WWE, just making sure that what is supposed to happen in the locker room happens in the locker room. It's amazing to watch guys evolve in this world of wrestling. And I think that that's really one of the big things that WWE has evolved into. And you hear this when we talk to the Undisputed Era boys, all four of them here on the podcast. They were talking about how at the Performance Center, one of the things that they really learned was that there is a lifetime in the wrestling business. That this isn't like, okay, you get in while you can get in, and eventually the business leaves you behind. There is life outside of the ring still in the wrestling business if this is the thing that you're obsessed with, that you're passionate about. If you don't want to leave, there's stuff to do. And you see this, you know, the Hurricane just started with WWE. You could on Twitter and Instagram, he's posting photos from the gorilla position, which is awesome to see. Jeff Jarrett is back on Raw. I mean, how amazing is that? To see Jeff Jarrett wrestling alongside the Road Dogg being there. He was just on this podcast, and it was really cool. Last year when we talked to Jeff Jarrett, he was even off the air. We went upstairs and had some food, and he was like, his mind was blown about what was happening with him in Mexico at the time. That he was wrestling over there. Like, he was done wrestling. And his mind was blown. I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. And I can't wait to get Jeff Jarrett back on this podcast. You know, I feel like we need to do two more shows with him. Last time Jeff was on, we basically covered his entire WWE, his first WCW, and then back to WWE run. But we still had his major WCW run and TNA run to kind of cover in a second part. I was going to do another like 2-hour podcast with him to get all that information. But I feel like there's a whole nother show now based on what's happened in the last year since joining the WWE Hall of Fame and now showing up at the Royal Rumble and then wrestling Elias on Raw. I mean, what's that like? It's so crazy. And wrestling is crazy and wrestling is amazing. And it really is. I mean, that's the position that Mark Henry's in. This is a lifetime dealio. He's finding a spot. Like, that's not a job that existed. This idea that, well, if there isn't necessarily a locker room general or whatever you want to call it, backstage making sure that everybody kind of does what is best for the business as a whole, maybe it's not the worst idea in the world to hire somebody that used to do that to do it now. I mean, has that much changed that they can't do it? I'd love to get the perspective of some of the younger guys too. I mean, what is that like to have Mark Henry around and being like, guys, this is what you need to do? Do they sit there and go like, oh, it's good, you're right, Mark. Oh, that's good insight. Or do they go like, get out of the way, you know, this is our time? I don't know. I'd love to get that perspective. I don't know who would be honest about it though. You know, if they don't feel it's the greatest idea in the world, it's probably one of the things that Mark Henry would probably teach you is, if you don't think it's the greatest idea in the world, keep it to yourself, because it's not going to help anybody. But we'll see. We'll see how that plays itself out. Speaking of playing itself out, you know, I told you, Caroline's February 27th, I would be doing the co-branded live show, Not Sam Wrestling versus the Major Brothers Wrestling Figure Podcast at Caroline's on Broadway, New York City, February 27th, 7:30 p.m., carolines.com to get tickets. Of course, there's information posted on my social media, on Zach Ryder's social media, Kurt Hawkins' social media. You can get there, and you should get there. But also, I'll be a guest in Houston. If you're not going to be in New York next weekend, so this would be the Saturday before Elimination Chamber, I'll be in Houston, and I'll be doing Booker T's live show. That was announced. So if you're going to be in Houston, check that out. Now, I don't know if I'm going to be doing anything else in Houston, quite frankly. I'm right now going to Houston to do Booker T's live show. Based on the way things are right now, I don't know, you know, if anything else is going to happen while I'm in Houston, but I will definitely be at Booker T's live show. So check that out if you're in the area. It'll be a good time. And speaking of a good time, let's have a good time right now with the state of wrestling.
It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
Yes, it is. Welcome, State of Wrestling time for Not Sam Wrestling. What is this? 224. I think it's our 30,015th episode. It's our 30,015th State of Wrestling. Forgive. I don't think my voice is gonna go, but you can probably hear it's already straining. It's been a long week. A lot of stuff, but a lot of stuff to do today. A lot of stuff to get into on State of Wrestling, and we're going to do just that. It's been, you know, doing the SiriusXM show. I was on Busted Open. I was on the Jamie Josta podcast. We did the interview with Mark Henry. A lot of strain on the vocal cords this week, which is, I'm sure, exactly what this voice was designed to do. But regardless, here we are. It's State of Wrestling. And you know what we do. We knock out, according to the last professional broadcaster, Sam Roberts, what are the top 5 stories this week in the world of professional wrestling. We count them down, and we start with number five. And number five is the Becky Lynch story. The Becky Lynch story that went through both Raw and SmackDown this week. You know, this Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey story is being heavily shown on WWE TV with a lot of buildup to WrestleMania. This makes me think, as I watch this, I believe, and maybe I'm being optimistic, I believe that the WWE is really planning on a one-on-one match between Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch at WrestleMania in the main event slot. It's the only reason. I mean, think about the energy that's being put into this WrestleMania match. Even the Seth Rollins-Brock Lesnar match does not have this kind of energy being put into it. And to me, that's because they realize, look, this is a risk. This was probably not the original plan, but this is the best plan right now. We're going to go with it, but I think we're going to need to sell some people on it. Let's start this sell job. However, 2 months out, what is it? All of February, all of March. We're going to go all the way from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania, selling you on this match and why it's going to be the match you think it's going to be. I think this is the only option for them. I think that it was pretty clear coming off of Survivor Series that Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey was the match that everybody wanted to see at Survivor Series. It was the match that should have main evented Survivor Series. Becky Lynch got injured, and since that time, this match is only more desired by the WWE fans. The question about adding Charlotte to the match, right? Now, there have been a lot of interactions between Charlotte and Becky Lynch. Charlotte is certainly not out of this story. But I would remind you that there are two pay-per-views between now and WrestleMania. There's Elimination Chamber, and I think Fastlane is happening in March. So I would imagine that there will be some kind of Becky Lynch-Charlotte story within those two pay-per-views. If not at Elimination Chamber, then at Fastlane. Something that would determine whether or not Charlotte will have anything to do with this main event. But the fact that Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey as a story is already being pushed by WWE. The fact that we're already getting teased with this idea that Becky Lynch is worried about Triple H and Stephanie McMahon taking away her WrestleMania match, you know, with this stuff of her not wanting to visit a doctor. That I don't think that they would tease us with the idea that we might not get this match if we weren't going to get this match. And I'll tell you why I don't think that Charlotte should be in this match. There's no doubt that Charlotte is, I guess, the linchpin, if that's the right term, of the WWE women's division. When it comes to the women's division, Charlotte is the standard bearer. She's the one. That said, Charlotte is on the list with John Cena, with Roman Reigns, with Hulk Hogan, really. The list of WWE superstars that will never have to worry about a lack of opportunity. We know, regardless of, oh, but it's the first time the women are main eventing WrestleMania. Understood. It's not going to be the last time women main event WrestleMania. It's certainly not going to be the last big spot for a woman at WrestleMania. We know that Charlotte is going to get opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. Let's be honest. There is absolutely no guarantee that Becky Lynch will ever have an opportunity this big again. Could you see, one possibility is that Becky Lynch is a main star and maintains her stardom for years and years and years to come. Sure. But isn't there a possibility that Becky Lynch is allowed her moment and then kind of drifts back away? And the only reason I say that is because she wasn't supposed to have the moment to begin with. She wasn't the picture that the WWE had painted for their women's division. A year ago, when Ronda Rousey had her first match, is when people started talking about Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. Between then and now, something truly organic happened, which put Becky Lynch in the position where WWE fans wanted to see her get this big moment and not Charlotte. Adding Charlotte to the match would give Charlotte an opportunity, but it would give Charlotte an opportunity that she is going to get over and over and over and over again. Charlotte will be able to have a big WrestleMania match for as long as she can stay healthy. As long as Charlotte is competing, you know she's not going to have any trouble getting a big-time WrestleMania match. She got one last year. She got the crowning moment as the first when they brought back the women's championship. She got that WrestleMania moment. She got the Asuka match at WrestleMania. She beat the undefeated streak, right? First women's champion after the Divas movement. First woman to defeat Asuka, both at WrestleMania. While all that was going on, Becky Lynch was losing a battle royal at the WrestleMania pre-show last year. Losing a battle royal at the WrestleMania pre-show last year. She was an asterisk last year. Meaning, oh yeah, Becky Lynch was there too, technically. How many WrestleManias has Becky Lynch competed at? Well, technically, I guess she competed at last year, but it was the kickoff show. And it was a battle royal. And she didn't come close to winning. This year, she's got the opportunity to main event. Will she have that same opportunity next year? I don't know. But to add Charlotte to this match dilutes the specialness of what Becky Lynch has built. To add Charlotte to this match makes it less special that Becky Lynch is there. And while it would be a feather in the cap of Charlotte, by the time she's done, her hat's going to look like a peacock. She's going to have so many feathers in it. How many feathers is Becky Lynch going to have? That remains to be seen. We can't predict that. But we can predict what's going to happen with Charlotte. And that's why I don't think Charlotte should be anywhere near this Becky Lynch Ronda Rousey match. In fact, I think we should tease it. I think she should get the opportunity. Since all she gets is opportunities, why not give her another opportunity to get the match, to be put in the match? But I think she should lose that opportunity. I think it might be refreshing to see Charlotte finally lose an opportunity. And if Charlotte, let's be honest, isn't in the Ronda Rousey match, she's going to get another great match at WrestleMania. Put her in there with Asuka again. I think that's the match that people want to see anyway. Build Asuka, build Asuka, build Asuka. And have her, maybe even have Charlotte lose to Asuka this year at WrestleMania. Charlotte can afford the loss. Can Asuka afford another loss? Probably, it'd be tough. Maybe not. Charlotte can afford the loss, and I think this is the way to go. Now, let's talk about the way the Becky Lynch story played out on Raw. Of course, on Raw, coming in with the bum knee, although I'm not sure which knee is hurt. You know, if you look at Royal Rumble and you look at Raw and you look at SmackDown, I don't know which one of Becky Lynch's knees is hurt. However, she says one of them's hurt and she don't want to go to the doctor. So Stephanie says either go to the doctor or we can't let you wrestle. She goes, I'm not going to the doctor. Becky says, I'm not going to the doctor. Stephanie says, well, then you can't wrestle. Becky Lynch knocks her out. Now, realistically, if I'm Ronda Rousey watching that match or that beatdown, Becky Lynch couldn't get to disarm her, the armbar, onto Stephanie McMahon because she was too injured. If she can't put that move on Stephanie McMahon, I don't think she's in any shape to go to WrestleMania and fight Ronda Rousey. But I also don't understand why Becky Lynch wouldn't just go to the doctor. It's like, maybe the doctor's going to say that you can't wrestle at WrestleMania, but if the doctor doesn't say you can wrestle at WrestleMania, you can't wrestle at WrestleMania. The result is exactly the same. So I don't know where your wiggle room is. She knocked out Stephanie McMahon on Raw. She showed up on SmackDown through the audience. Triple H comes out. She smacks Triple H in the face. I thought both segments were really good. You know, I thought Stephanie and Becky were good together. I thought Charlotte was excellent. She's always excellent with Triple H and Becky and the whole deal. I don't mind Becky fighting against authority figures. But what I do mind is the idea that Becky Lynch is the new Stone Cold. You know why Becky Lynch is the new Stone Cold does not work for me? Because the whole thing that made Stone Cold Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, was there was nobody before. The one thing that truly made Stone Cold Steve Austin Stone Cold Steve Austin was he was not the next Hulk Hogan. He was not the parallel to The Undertaker. He was not the next Shawn Michaels. He was just Stone Cold Steve Austin. There was nobody to pair him with in that way. He was a phenomenon like we'd never seen before. That is the context that I wish that people would talk about Becky Lynch in. I get that the man t-shirt looks very similar to the Austin 316 t-shirt. I don't even have a problem with that. But what I hope is not happening, what I don't want to see, is Stephanie and Triple H becoming a rival to Becky Lynch just to harken back to the Vince McMahon Stone Cold days. Because I don't think Becky Lynch has the same energy as Stone Cold. You know, I think there's a sort of almost, I don't want to say fun-loving, but there's almost a wink to Becky Lynch's cockiness that didn't exist for Stone Cold. Stone Cold was a miserable man with no feelings. Becky Lynch is somebody who likes to get you. She likes to get you. She gets off on that. She thinks that's fun. Stone Cold didn't think anything was fun. You know, they're different characters altogether. Yes, they both rose to the top in a very, very organic way. But the rises were very, very different, in my opinion. And I think if we really want Becky Lynch to have an energy that's like Stone Cold, we have to stop comparing her to Stone Cold. Because we didn't compare Stone Cold to anybody. So I don't think we should be comparing Becky Lynch to anybody. I don't mind if she wants to keep slapping Triple H in the face and knocking out Stephanie McMahon. I'll watch that. But I don't want it done for the sake of putting her on a column next to Steve Austin. Because we should be crafting a whole new column just for Becky. Because it's really amazing what she's done, regardless of what anybody before her, including Steve Austin, did. And Stone Cold's the best of all time. He's the best person to be compared to. But in order to be in line, to be the best of all time, you can't be compared to anybody. Best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. Bret the Hitman Hart, not the next anybody. Shawn Michaels, wrestler of the 90s, Heartbreak Kid, Mr. WrestleMania, not compared to anybody. The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan. Even John Cena and Roman Reigns, really. I mean, some people you could say, well, Roman Reigns is the next John Cena, but only in the sense that he was the top guy. Totally different characters, energies, the whole thing. John Cena was compared to Hulk Hogan, but again, different energies, different the whole thing. I think in order to really be a top superstar, you can't be sitting there hearkening back to anybody else. And I think that that's important for Becky Lynch. Let's go on to story number four. Story number four does tip the hat back to WWE history, and story number four happened during the halftime of the Super Bowl, and that was halftime heat. Of course, the last time we saw halftime heat, I want to say it was 1999. It was an empty arena match, The Rock versus Mankind, with the WWE Championship on the line. The Rock ends up losing the match with the help of Mankind using a forklift to pin the Brahma Bull. It was a concept that I think was really remembered fondly. I think it's a tough thing to do. You know, back then it was done on MTV because that's where Sunday Night Heat was on. And Sunday Night Heat had the 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. time slot. And they worked out a deal where they did a regular episode of Sunday Night Heat, but it was taped, obviously. And they did it in such a way that the minute the Super Bowl went to halftime, they would be able to jump on and show this empty arena match, and it would be halftime heat. It wasn't live, so it was a different deal. This year, they decide to take advantage of the technology that they have, the WWE Network, and all the assets that they have, specifically in the Performance Studio, and the superstars of NXT, many of whom live in and around the Performance Center, but I'm almost positive. Although, that is the fantasy of wrestling fans, right? That's the reality show that I want to see. The Undisputed Era and the Velveteen Dream, they all just live in the Performance Center, of course. It's WWE. I wish that they, like, back in the day, they probably would have told people that. If this was still 1992, when all those episodes of WWE Superstars were on, they'd be like, well, of course. Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, they share a room in the Performance Center. That's where they live. They're WWE Superstars. Imagine if they had a performance center for Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, the cartoon show. There'd be a good guy performance center and a bad guy performance center, and they'd all live there. The characters would just exist 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I want to believe that the NXT superstars live in the performance center, and I think that they should. But we went live from the performance center on the WWE Network as well as throughout WWE's social media. You have to believe that for these guys performing, this is one of the biggest televised audiences that they've ever had. I mean, they did such a good job of promoting it. I saw it on the top of Twitter all afternoon leading up to it. And the minute that Halftime Heat went on the air, if you were on Twitter, you could just click the video. You could watch it live on Twitter. You could watch it live on WWE's YouTube, on WWE's Facebook. You could, of course, I watched it on the WWE Network as I was doing my own show on my YouTube channel, YouTube/NotSam. And I thought it was exactly what it should have been. They had Vic Joseph and Shawn Michaels doing commentary. They did a great job. Vic Joseph is amazing. And it was great to see Shawn Michaels put that headset on. I mean, decades removed, I think, from the last time he did it. But if anybody knows the story of these guys, it's Shawn Michaels. If anybody knows how to portray the superstars of NXT, it's Shawn Michaels. And there was no doubt that on one end, they wanted to sell people on this concept of Halftime Heat and look at the content that the WWE brand offers. But on another end, they went, wait a minute, and I'm sure Shawn Michaels and Triple H had a lot of thought put into this. Wait a second. This is an amazing opportunity to be a commercial for NXT. You have to imagine that there are far more people watching this show than watch NXT TV. Probably more people watching than watch TakeOver, only because it was shown way beyond just the WWE Network. Of course, it was a six-man tag. It was Gargano, Ciampa, and Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream, Ricochet, and Aleister Black. The Performance Center, I mean, for any of you that have seen the Performance Center before, it looked completely different. There's a video on the Performance Center YouTube channel where they go over everything that they did to the building itself. But man, did they turn the inside, they turned it inside out. It looked very similar to Full Sail. And the way they usually have it set up, I mean, so the Performance Center has like something like, I think, seven rings all laid out. It's like this really nice warehouse kind of environment where there are seven rings laid out. And then there's a small, sort of, not like small, but smaller than what they use on TV, curtain and ramp with lighting, like a lighting rig on it, so people can practice entrances and promos and whatnot. If you watch Breaking Ground from 2015 on the WWE Network, the reality show, you can see the entrance ramp where they do promo class and whatnot. Of course, there's the gym attached to it under that Performance Center sign with the glass and everything. But it's not, there's space to walk and everything, but they clearly moved everything out. They darkened everything. They put curtains up over everything. The ramp and the entranceway, that was not the practice entranceway. I figured that they would just make this easy. They would set up some chairs because, you know, they do that. Like, they have people in the Performance Center put on matches for other wrestlers that are also in the Performance Center. Like, they'll bring, you know, folding chairs in. And the superstars of NXT that are also in the Performance Center will sit down and watch exhibition matches between other NXT stars. In October, 2K did a big event at the Performance Center. And one of the things they did was they put on a couple of matches for everybody to watch. But they used the practice, quote-unquote, entranceway to come to the ring. They used the center ring to compete in. And they had about 30 chairs set up at ringside for us to watch. I thought it might be something similar to that, but the WWE is way smarter than me. They realize that because there's going to be so many eyes on this thing, let's not turn this into amateur hour. We're using the Performance Center because it's ours, and we don't have to put on a full live event that we're coordinating with the halftime show. We can just do it when we do it because it's our building. But they opened it up to, I think, friends and family for the most part of people who are in and around the Performance Center. And they made it look really, really similar to Full Sail. They brought in a real entranceway and everything, and the production value on it was just upped to the nines. So great. And then they allowed that six-man tag. See, when I was looking at it, I was like, yeah, it's good because you're not wasting a match that you could have at TakeOver on this halftime show. And you've got Gargano and Ciampa on the same team. But since it's a six-man tag and Adam Cole is on that team, it's not exactly the reunion of Ciampa and Gargano. So it's like, okay, it's interesting. And it follows up the brawl that happened at the end of TakeOver. But you're not showing your hand too much, if that makes sense. But what I didn't realize was that six-man tag was going to allow all six men to show off what they can do. Every man in that match had a couple of moments to really show the audience at home, this is who Tommaso Ciampa is. This is who the Velveteen Dream is. And I loved the Velveteen Dream's commitment to what it was, coming out in the football pants with the jersey and everything. I don't need to tell you, but this Velveteen Dream is just something incredible. There's the video of Ricochet and the Velveteen Dream going, yeah, 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 and Aleister Black just walks through them silently, and then, you know, we get a couple moments in the match to see who Aleister Black is. If you had never seen NXT before, I feel like watching Halftime Heat is going to make you a fan. I didn't hear one negative thing about the show. I thought it was terrific, and I really think that you're going to make some new NXT fans with it. I think it's something that WWE should do every year. I don't know what the cost is, but it seems like it's worth it. You know, for the value that they got in return for it, it seems like a worthwhile endeavor to do this thing. I thought it was just really, really cool. Speaking of NXT, we move on to story number three, and that is the name change for Heavy Machinery. It was, I think, really brought to light by Big E, who he tweeted out photos of Tucker Knight and Otis Dozovic, of course, from the Heavy Machinery. And he said, welcome to the club, because on these photos of them on the main roster now, which, by the way, I think they've been doing really, really good. I think WWE is doing a really good job of showing who those characters are and why this isn't just sort of a, you know, you run the risk if you're just doing Heavy Machinery, right? And it's just a couple of big guys wearing trunks that look like road signs. You kind of run the risk of making them feel like WCW jobbers, right? But because you're showing those personalities, especially on Otis, and really showing who this guy is and why the NXT fans fell in love with him and why, you know, stakes and weights and everything, you know, I think that they're doing a really good job of making this a team that fans are going to get behind. And I think right now, fans love a tag team. They love a unit tag team. Not a tag team that's two people brought together. But they love the idea of Heavy Machinery. They're a team. The Revival, a team. You know, they don't exist separate. They are like the Rockers, tag team specialists. There was something about that era, that 80s, early 90s era of tag team wrestling, where nowadays it's almost like you see this tag team and the eventual goal is just to separate them, or that you know they're both going to just go their separate ways at some point. But back then it was like, whether it was Demolition or, I mean, the Rockers and the Hart Foundation, not the greatest examples in the world with Bret and Shawn, but the Rockers and the Hart Foundation. You know, you didn't think of these teams. The Beverly Brothers, you know, you didn't, the Legion of Doom. The purpose was not to break up these teams. The purpose was to have strong, the Bushwhackers, strong tag teams that were identifiable as an act. And I think that there is still a huge appetite for that. And I think Heavy Machinery fits that bill pretty well. But their names, I guess, have been changed to Tucker and Otis. That's what it said on the WWE website. This is coming off of, we either talked about it last week or the week before, Andrade Cien Almas becoming simply Andrade. Of course, Big E posted it because the name Langston was dropped a long time ago. Cesaro is no longer Antonio. He's just Cesaro. The list goes on and on of people who dropped last name or one names that just wanted to go by a single name. And obviously that's a trend that's going on right now. I don't mind it. I mean, especially for heavy machinery, you know, if we're going to focus on the heavy machinery name, I think just Tucker and Otis, actually, that one works for me. Andrade Almas, I do wish that he had two names. Just, I don't know why. But I think that, you know, I don't necessarily love just the Andrade name, but Tucker and Otis, I think, really works as just singular tag team, singular superstar names in this tag team. But I also don't get too wrapped up in it, you know? Some people really take it to heart. Some people get really, really upset about the whole thing, and I just don't. Speaking of tag teams, heavy rumor this week. I guess this will be story number two. Story number one, I think I'm just going to load up. Heavy rumor this week, it was popping off before Raw on Monday, and then it wasn't addressed. But the internet was saying that the Hart Foundation may be going into the Hall of Fame. That's Bret Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and Jimmy Hart. I think that that would be a great way to get Jim the Anvil Neidhart in. Like, look, Jim the Anvil Neidhart absolutely deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, whether it's his... the Hart Foundation run is certainly the most iconic run in the late 80s and early 90s. But then you go forward, he had that quick run in the, still in the early 90s, but slightly later in the early 90s in the new foundation with Owen Hart. And then he had his I want to say singles run because it wasn't exactly a tag team, but he had his run with Owen later when Owen was the King of Hearts and Jim the Anvil Neidhart came out to be his second. Even further along, when the Hart Foundation really, who as a faction doesn't get talked about enough, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Davey Boy Smith, Brian Pillman, and of course Jim the Anvil Neidhart, one of the top factions of the 90s in my opinion, if not of all time. I love the late 90s Hart Foundation faction, but I think it gets a little overcomplicated, especially because everybody in the late 90s Hart Foundation has unfortunately left us. They're no longer on the planet. So, except for Bret Hart, obviously. Jimmy Hart is still with us. I think that the early 90s, late 80s Hart Foundation is probably the most iconic in terms of Jim the Anvil Neidhart's career. And, you know, there is something to be said, if this is true, there is something to be said. It's kind of a bummer when somebody who's passed away goes into the Hall of Fame. You like them to at least be represented by somebody who you can look back. The nostalgia factor of the Hall of Fame is huge for viewers, for fans. Like, it's all about the nostalgia. So the idea of seeing Bret Hart and Jimmy Hart together on stage might soften the blow of the fact that we're all bummed out that we lost Jim the Anvil Neidhart. I think that in order, because this, I, in my opinion, if this does happen, it really is about Jim the Anvil Neidhart. I think Natty should be the one to put the Hart, to induct the Hart Foundation in. And then I think Jimmy and Bret should accept for the foundation, unless there's somebody better to induct the Hart Foundation. And then Natalya is able to come out with Bret and Jimmy Hart. But, I don't know which one is necessarily better than the other, but I think Natalya could do a hell of a job inducting. Well, either way, she's going to be able to do a hell of a speech. So, I'm all for, if this is true, I'd be all for the Hart Foundation of the early 90s going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year in New York City. I think it'd be cool. Let's go to story number one. Story number one is just the AEW rumors. So this podcast comes out on Thursday, the 7th? Thursday the 7th is today. And there is an AEW event scheduled in Las Vegas to announce their next event. Now, All Elite Wrestling, of course, at the press conference announced Cody and the Bucks and Adam Page. They announced Pac. They announced, formerly known as Neville, they announced Jericho, Janela, MJF, SoCal Uncensored. Since then, I want to say, Dr. Britt Baker. No, yeah, Britt Baker was announced, right? I think so. I think she was there. Brandi Rhodes, of course. Then you go into who's been announced since then. Davey Havoc was announced this week. Jungle Boy, the son of Luke Perry, announced. There was rumors. I mean, it was alluded to at a live event, but no official graphic has been posted that Pentagon, the Lucha Bros, Phoenix and Pentagon have been added, which is, that one is a big one. I said a long time ago, I really think WWE should be doing everything they can to get Pentagon and Phoenix into the WWE. I just think they'd be such an asset. Especially as well as those Rey Mysterio Andrade matches are going. If you could also throw in Pentagon and Phoenix, like, you'd have a nice lucha showing on WWE TV that I think WWE would really benefit from. But you look at it, and the rumors that have been spilling out about AEW this week. The first one, and we can go in order of do we buy it or don't we buy it. Of course, the conversation continues. Is Dean Ambrose leaving WWE for real, and is he going to AEW? You know, based on what we saw on Raw, first of all, I don't know if he's got some kind of senioritis and it's really affecting him well, but Ambrose's performance on Raw, the last 2 weeks have been two of his best performances in years on the microphone. I mean, just like incredible. I don't know if he's laying it all out because he's only got however many weeks left, or if something else is afoot. I don't know what's going on, but it's just really, really good stuff. The fact that he lost clean to EC3 makes me believe that, okay, maybe they're giving him some shine on the way out, but on the way out, he's going to be putting some people over. Unless they're building to something else. I really don't know. But is he going to AEW? Possible. Dean Ambrose, on my list, gets a possible. The next one, Finn Balor. We got two coming from social media. Finn Balor, over the past couple days, has posted pictures with Chris Jericho, has posted pictures with Pac, has posted a few photos with AEW peeps, making people wonder, is Finn Balor trying to tell us something? I think that Finn Balor is trying to tell us that he likes trolling people. Finn Balor has played his social media games for a long time. I don't see Finn Balor going anywhere. I think he just likes to get... I think Finn Balor likes to use his social media to get people all riled up. I think he thinks it's funny, and I think that's what he's doing here. So I love it. I hope he does it forever. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's WWE for keeps. The next one on social media. The Undertaker. The Undertaker removed anything WWE-related from his Twitter and Instagram profiles. Now, I want to believe that The Undertaker's social media manager is the one that removed the WWE from his Twitter and Instagram profiles. And the reason why I want to believe that is because the idea of the dead man picking up his phone and messing with Twitter and Instagram is a thought so tragic, unnerving, and character assassinating for me that I never want to believe that The Undertaker is doing that. So I'm going to say his social media manager did it just so I can preserve The Undertaker's essence. But he removed all WWE references from his Twitter and from his Instagram. And at this point, there's no obvious WrestleMania match in his future. Right? Like, there's been no... John Cena hasn't brought up his loss to The Undertaker last year at WrestleMania. Nobody has this open beef. There's no obvious, I want to see that match with The Undertaker. I mean, there are matches that would be cool. Be cool to see a Daniel Bryan Undertaker match. It'd be cool. There are matches that it would be cool to see. But there's nothing, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing to, if you want to give The Undertaker a win this year, you know, have him beat Dean Ambrose on his way out or something like that. But there's nothing specific that makes you go, The Undertaker's definitely wrestling at WrestleMania this year. Especially because they appear to be putting a lot of energy into Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch. Like, they're looking at those as big headline matches. So the question is The Undertaker All Elite Wrestling bound? And that question is brought up as another rumor hits where AEW is saying, I don't know if AEW is officially saying this or it's just leaked information, leaked, quote unquote, that there is a big-time WWE superstar that has been made a huge offer to come to AEW. First and foremost, like, let's have a lesson in contract law. No contracted WWE superstar has been made a giant offer to go to AEW. That would be illegal. That would be contract tampering. In 2019, nobody's doing that. Nobody's taking that risk. So I don't believe for a second that anybody has gotten an official big money offer. You know, just because why would AEW put themselves in such a stupid position this early in the game? But that's not to say that there is an interest. And in the wrestling business, what they say is information travels quickly. So, is The Undertaker that man? Took WWE out of his Twitter profile. He's open to bookings. There's an email that you can email to book him. Here's what I think. The Undertaker is ready to go on the autograph convention circuit. He's ready to make some money, sign in some photos for the fans, and that's what this is all about. He wants the world to know that he is allowed to do stuff that the WWE is not involved with so that he can make his money. But when I say stuff, I mean signings, conventions, maybe, you know, speaking events, things like that. I don't think that this is his way of reaching out and saying, I'm ready to wrestle somewhere else. I can't for the life of me believe that at this point in The Undertaker's career, he would want to go to another company. I don't see what the upside for it would be in any way, shape, or form. I don't know how much money you would have to give The Undertaker at this point to do that. I mean, look, does he need the money? No. $10 million? Who's going to say no to that? But I don't think they're giving him $10 million for a match. And quite honestly, you know, if The Undertaker were to pop up in AEW, it would be interesting, I guess. But it would almost be sort of gross, you know what I mean? It'd be cheesy to know that AEW is going that far to get some buzz. Like, it certainly is not a move. If a company wants to prove that they are the alternative, they don't get The Undertaker to come in and do a match. You know? And it almost makes you look at The Undertaker like, oh, you're not supernatural. You're just a guy who went in it for the money. So I don't see it working out for anybody if that were the case. And I don't think it is the case. I also, you know, I would imagine The Undertaker will wrestle again in WWE. That's my guess. The last rumor is Randy Orton. Randy Orton is a name that's been tossed around as possibly being AEW bound. That's one I could see. I could see that happening with Randy Orton. You know, and I think it could be interesting. You know, I like Randy Orton. I think Randy Orton is amazing in the ring. I think he's a cool dude. You know, it is one of those things where Randy Orton is, as long as he's been around, he started so young that he's certainly, I mean, he's in amazing shape. He certainly has some years left in him. Maybe, you know, venturing outside of the WWE for the first time in his adult life could add a refresher, a refreshing coat of paint to Randy Orton. I don't know. But I think it's interesting, and I think it's something that everybody's going to be looking at. I would say it's definitely far from definite, and I also wouldn't be shocked to see, and I don't think it would be a mistake at all, to see Randy Orton being a WWE lifer. You know, I think being a lifer is a respectable thing, especially when you've got a career like somebody like Randy Orton has. There is nothing that makes you go, oh, Randy Orton should have left when this happened or when that happened. Like, Randy Orton has become a legend, in my opinion, based on what he's done in WWE. And I think him being one of these WWE staples that showed up and never left, I think it's a cool thing. I think it's cool that that happened with The Undertaker. I think it's cool that that's the story with John Cena. I like that. I like that. I'm a traditionalist, and I don't do well with change. Maybe that's part of it, but I like that. We're going to talk next week all about the Elimination Chamber that's coming up on Sunday. Thank you all for being a part of this. Don't forget to go to carolines.com. Get your tickets now to watch me mop the floor with Z-A-C-K-H, Zack Ryder, and Kurt Hawkins, the Major Brothers. It's a podcast war. And the beef gets squashed live at Caroline's on Broadway, February 27th, Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. Be there or be square. Get your tickets at carolines.com. I'll see you there, and I'll see you next week right here on your very favorite show, Not Sam Wrestling. Toodaloo.
Thanks for listening. Follow at Not Sam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Rate, review, and subscribe. This has been Not Sam Wrestling.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.